Hey, this is Todd Stacey. Welcome to In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. This week's guest is Congressman Mike Rogers of Alabama's 3rd District. That district runs along the eastern border of the state from Cherokee County to the north, all the way down past Auburn to Russell County in the south. He was first elected to Congress back in 2002, actually to take the place of a guy named Bob Riley, who was running for governor. He was leaving Congress to run for governor. So that makes Mr. Rogers Alabama's 2nd longest serving member in the House. For as long as I've been following him, Congressman Rogers has been engaged on military and agriculture issues. He's been on both the Agriculture Committee and the House Armed Services Committee pretty much the whole time he's been in Congress, with a few exceptions, and he actually gets into that, explains that during our discussion. That all makes sense because his district is home to the Anniston Army Depot, where they produce and repair tanks and other ground combat vehicles. Actually, this week, the depot was awarded a new contract for some of those ground combat vehicles, and that's a big deal. They employ about 3,600 workers there, and so that's a big deal. The 3rd District is also highly agricultural, which makes work on the farm bill a big priority for him. One thing I found interesting was how candid he was about the history of the Farm Bill, including the negotiations on the Farm Bill, but not just this year, not just the one they passed last year, but going back to the 90s and before that. Mr. Rogers is now the ranking member on the House Homeland Security Committee. That means he's the top Republican and would have been chairman had the Republicans kept the House. That's a spot that puts him in a unique position of negotiating how Congress deals with one of the more sensitive issues on the table, and that is the Russian attempts to interfere with our elections. He spoke at length about that issue, and I was a bit surprised at how much bipartisan cooperation there seemed to be on that issue. But the biggest issue for Mr. Rogers is the Space Force. In fact, he might be the most engaged member of Congress on that issue. When you hear Space Force, you might think of a highly caricatured campaign idea from Donald Trump last election. But the effort to create a military branch or a department dedicated to space activity has been around for a while. It's actually really timely right now because the last several weeks, Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan has been testifying to congressional appropriators about both the immediate and long-term costs of creating a Space Force. It's fair to say that many in Congress remain skeptical about creating a Space Force within the Air Force. In fact, a House Defense Appropriations draft markup this week included funding to continue studying the Space Force, which is congressionalese for not going to happen this year. You may see a lot more news about that line item on the Space Force and a lot of Air Force appropriations in the coming days and weeks. But the Pentagon argues it's an essential need. The United States used to not have any competition for dominance in space. Now we have competition in Russia and China. That's not to say that those countries are winning by any means, but they are trying, and the military wants more tools to defend on that frontier. Congressman Rogers, I think, does a good job of explaining what the idea really is, why it is necessary, and how politics impacted the entire thing. I really appreciated the very substantive nature of our discussion, and I really hope that you enjoy it too. Oh, the audio is picking up right as we are talking about the issue of immigration and getting into his work on Homeland Security. I went ahead and spared you the pleasantries and small talk at the beginning. You're welcome. His big theme, I mean, really is immigration. That's Homeland Security. You're now a ranking member. I know it's not, I mean, I assume that means you would have been chairman had the Republicans maintained the majority, but also means you will be chairman if things work out in 2020.
Right.
So how's that going? Have y'all started work yet on Homeland?
Yeah, I'm going to be meeting with Chairman Thompson this week about what we're going to be doing going forward. We've already gotten signals from the majority side as to what they intend to focus on in the first 6 months. They're going to spend a lot of time on election security. They are still trying to promote this theme or this message that the only way Donald Trump was elected president in 2016 was Russian interference. Although there is zero evidence of any absolute of any interference with the election itself. And that's not me, that's DOJ has done a complete investigation and came up with that result. However, there was $20 million spent by the Russians on disinformation through social media. But there's nothing new about that. They've been doing that all over the world for decades, and there's in all sorts of countries. And plus, $20 million in social media was a drop in the bucket in a over a $1 billion presidential campaign. So that did not decide the election in any way. However, I am in agreement with the Democrat majority that we have cyber vulnerabilities that we have to protect against in the future. And we do need to spend a good amount of time talking about how can we protect our election systems from tampering, because we know there are people, that bad actors, that want to tamper with election results. So you're going to see us spend a good bit of time on election security in the Homeland Security Committee. Border security is going to be the one that gets most of the attention just because of the president's focused on a border barrier. And then they'll spend a good bit of time in the first 6 months talking about Puerto Rico recovery. They're still trying to, again, promote this theme that the president's racist, and the only reason that his administration didn't do a better job in the Puerto Rico recovery was his racist view. When in fact, FEMA did an outstanding job of getting supplies to Puerto Rico. The problem we had was once you got there, before the hurricane, the infrastructure was decayed and fragile. And after the hurricane, you couldn't get supplies from the ports inland. There was just no infrastructure in place. So we'll spend time focused on that. After the first 6 months, there's no telling where we'll go.
What's the biggest difference in being in the minority between committee and just general?
We're not driving the bus, we're riding in the bus. I like driving the bus.
But you only you and Mr. Adderholt have actually, and as far as the House, have actually served the minority before. So have y'all had to kind of catch the other younger members up as far as?
Well, we've tried to warn them or prepare them, because you can't prepare somebody who doesn't know. And, you know, the fact is over 70% of the Republican conference has been here since 2010 elections. They've never known anything but the majority. As you know, I came here in 2002 election, so I was here for 4 years in the majority, then 4 years in the minority, then 8 years back in the majority. And we tried to prepare them for it, but you can't. I mean, they're last night I was hearing more comments, grumblings from some of the younger guys. And it's going to probably be 3 months in before they finally kind of get through the changes in their, you know, a lot of them are angry right now. They're just now starting to get angry. And then they'll get depressed. But then you'll start thinking about how do we fight our way back? Because that's what the mission is right now. We want to try to resist bad government, look for ways that we can work with them on good government. But our main goal is to get the majority back. So we're driving the bus again so we can start driving policy and try, instead of trying to shape the Democrats' policy to be more acceptable. We want to be driving our policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, one of the policies you've been really involved in is the Space Force. Where does that stand? I mean, I know the president made some announcements, but from a practical standpoint, where are we on that?
Yeah. Well, to give the background, the idea for a Space Force came out of my subcommittee. I chaired the Strategic Forces Subcommittee on Armed Services for the last 6 years. We have jurisdiction over nuclear weapons, missile defense, and space. And when we talk about space, we're not talking about Star Trek kind of jets where people go up into space and explore. That's NASA. We're talking about our satellites that we use for command and control of our nuclear weapons, that guide our missile systems, that we use for positioning troops, a whole host of communications purposes. And we've become very dependent on them to fight and win wars. Well, the Chinese and Russians have figured that out. And so they've started trying to find a way to make our satellites vulnerable to their attacks so they could advantage us. And unfortunately, in the last few years, they have become our peers in space, where we've always been dominant. So we've decided in the Armed Services Committee, the only way to fix this was to pull space mission, which is mostly in the Air Force right now, out of the Air Force, and then a little bit out of the Navy and the Army, and put it all in its own service with its own budget, its own mission, its own educational system, culture, everything. And we passed that out of the House, not only the subcommittee, but the full Armed Services Committee and the full House last year to set up a separate space service.
NDAA?
Yes. It was called the Space Corps at the time. Okay. Trying to, and I used the term Corps when we developed it to further this purpose. I wanted people to understand this was not new. We had done the same thing in the Department of the Navy, where we had the Navy and the Marine Corps, two services in one department.
Air Force.
We're going to have the Air Force and the Space Force in one department of the Air Force. So that's why we use the term Corps. But the President wanted to change it to Space Force once he found out about it. So anyway, the Senate felt like we were going real fast. They said, well, let's get the Pentagon to tell us whether or not they need it. So the way we ended last year's NDAA was with a requirement that the Pentagon study this for 6 months and give us a report. Well, that report came back in September of last year saying, we agree. Now that we've looked at it, there's no way to fix this in the Air Force. We need a separate service. So Secretary Shanahan and the Defense Department are presenting to, they've already presented to the House staff this week, or I say the House staff, the House chairman and ranking member of the Armed Services Committee this week. They're presenting to the Senate Armed Services Chairman and Ranking Member this week and staff next week what their proposals are for this year's NDAA to finalize the standing up of a Space Force. So and it's got bipartisan support, so we fully expect it to happen this year.
I was going to ask, you know, sometimes it's anything that the President supports, you're going to see some, but Democrats are on board with us?
They are. This came out of the committee last year, subcommittee, unanimously, full committee, almost unanimously. And the fact is, we can't talk about it publicly, but we've all been briefed in the skiff on what's going on with Russia and China. This is not partisan. This is protecting our country. Now, there was a point last year where it became partisan, and that's after President Trump announced that he wanted this done. His campaign, unfortunately, got excited and started issuing bumper stickers and campaign paraphernalia with Trump's Space Force. Well, that just set the Democrats off.
That'll do it.
Yeah. So what a lot of them campaigned against was Trump's Space Force. Well, initially when the Department of Defense was fashioning this, they were going to set up a whole new Department of Space. Like now we have the Department of the Navy, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force. They were going to have a Department of the Space Force. And that's what the Democrats hung their hat against. We don't need a new bureaucracy. I agree with them. And they have decided to trash that. They're going to keep the Space Force in the Department of the Air Force. The Democrats are happy again. So they campaigned against the Trump Space Force, which was going to be a new department. That's gone, and it's back to the original plan now, and they're on board again.
Switching gears to another committee, you're Alabama's only member on agriculture, or have been.
Me and Frank Lucas of Oklahoma had to take a leave of absence to make room for all the freshmen this year.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It happened one other time back in 2010 when we took the majority. We had 89 freshmen. I had to take a leave for that term. But my plan is to go back on in 2 years when these freshmen move on to their next assignment.
Well, but Farm Bill's done. I mean, you got Farm Bill done. I'm guessing it won't start up in earnest for another couple of years.
That's what Frank and I are both telling our constituents, is that by the time we get to another Farm Bill, hopefully we'll both be back on there. Because I've been on there since I got in Congress in 2002.
Well, why is that important? Walk through. I mean, I know Farm Bill was a year ago, but walk through, you know, how that process went, what your involvement was, and what the ultimate result was, including working with the administration.
Well, it was. They're all difficult. This was my third farm bill, and it's incredibly painful passing a farm bill. Not in committee, that's easy, because we all care about agriculture. But once you get out of committee, you got to get the votes on the House floor, and half the people in the Congress don't care about agriculture because they don't have agriculture in the districts. fact, more than half, and it's about cutting deals. And the deal's always been, since 1965, is we paired food stamps with the farm programs to get them passed. Because Republicans aren't big on voting for food stamps, Democrats don't want to vote for farm programs. So they started pairing those in 65, and it was 50-50, 50% food stamps, 50% farm programs. The last two farm bills have been 80% food stamps, 20% farm programs. That's what it took to get them passed. This one was no different. However, this time we had an added problem in that we wanted to try to wean people off food stamps. So we wanted a requirement, we were still in the majority, that said if you get food stamps, you've got to either be working 20 hours a week, and if you don't have a job, we'll help you find one for 20 hours a week. Or you got to go to school 20 hours a week to train for a job, and we'll pay for it. But you got to do something for at least 20 hours a week. Can't sit home and draw your food stamps. The Democrats went nuts, just absolutely nuts over it. And in the end, we didn't get it because while we controlled the House and the Senate Republican chairman didn't want the work requirement either. He didn't want food with it. So we wound up not getting the work requirement. However, the one good news, piece of good news about that work requirement is the problem has been this. There's always been a watered-down work requirement in food stamps, but there's also the option for each state to get a waiver. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, every state asks for the waiver. They don't want to fool with implementing a work requirement. Well, Sonny Perdue, the current agriculture secretary, has pledged to us that he will not be granting waivers, that states are going to have to implement the existing work requirement. So we figure that's at least a step in the right direction to wean people off food stamps by getting them trained up for jobs where they can pay for their food. But there were good things in this food farm bill that we cared a lot about. One of the concerns that we've had is there's a generational problem where young people don't know what to go in agriculture. It's a risky business with thin margins and a lot of debt. So we've put money in there to help with educational opportunities, scholarship opportunities to get younger people to train to be smart farmers in the future, and money for loan programs for young farmers. One of the big things that I'm excited about was we put a lot of money in there for broadband for rural communities, and that's something I'm urging county commissions and city councils in rural areas throughout Alabama to be calling the USDA district director in Alabama and saying, how do I apply for that rural broadband? Because that is what you have to be in business in America, is access to the internet, and farming's business. They got to be able to have it. And not just that, you've got to be able, in order to compete in agriculture now, get into what they're calling smart farming or precision farming. Getting back to satellites, a lot of people don't know this, but most bigger farmers, they don't have people in those tractors. They're being guided by satellites when they plow the fields and plant seeds and such. And that's the future. So we will want to get this technology out into rural Alabama, so hopefully people will embrace this opportunity.
You mentioned local officials. It's been my observation that you tend to spend a lot more time with the legislature. I mean, you were a member of the legislature, right. So maybe that makes sense. I get asked so many times about, hey, what's going to happen? Is Alabama going to lose a congressional seat? It's comes up almost everywhere I go because people just figure that I know somehow, which nobody does. But should that happen, I mean, who knows what happens after the 2020 census? The last time we had a census, the last time we had redistricting, your relationships probably paid off. You had such good relationships in the State House, being a former member. Do you think that might pay off this next time around?
Yeah. Well, those are my buddies. I was down there for 8 years and had great friendships, not only with the legislators, but the member of the lobby community. And I've kept all of those warm for the years, part and primary because they're my friends and I wanted to keep them warm. Secondly, they're in the same world that I'm in, the same business world. We have a lot in common. But it did pay off huge dividends. Last census, they allowed us to draw our own districts, and they passed them the way we drew them. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen this time. I hope the same pattern will be followed. But what will happen if we do lose a district, obviously the state legislature finally decides what those six districts are going to look like. It is my hope that this time they will give us a chance to work it out among ourselves up here. But they'll be the final arbiters of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really all I had. Is there anything else you want to add to?
Just to remind people that, you know, when folks see all the fussing up here, they just need to be mindful. That's what we're supposed to do. You know, this place is not supposed to get along, and it's always been this way, particularly when you deal with big issues. There's nothing new happening in this town. It may be a 50-50 country, but it's always been a lot of fussing going on up here when we're dealing with big issues, and that's the way it's supposed to be. So we'll be okay.
All right. Well, that's very nice. Thank you, Connor.
All right. Enjoyed it.
All right.